with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. For the third night in a row, we are live from Capitol Hill, from the headquarters of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, Washington, D.C., and a stunningly beautiful day it is here today. The humidity that was so oppressive yesterday is largely gone, and the sky is sky blue. And it's just been a lovely, lovely day. Now if only the air conditioning worked. But you know what? You can't have everything now, can you? Before we get started, because new folks wander in all the time, this is the Horn. This is the Head On Radio Network. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. You can listen to the Horn only on the internet, except for a few varied places in the U.S. where we might be running on pirate radio. Yar. But if you are listening on the internet, there are a variety of ways and means for you to do so. The easiest, of course, if you're at your computer, is simply to go to headonradionetwork.com and use the one-click player. That's the easiest. But, of course, you can also listen live at the link that is at whiterosesociety.org. You can listen at Stitcher Internet Radio. You can listen at iTunes Radio. You can listen at TuneIn Radio and at Tuner Internet Radio, as well as a wide variety of other sources, as I've noted before, of which I am unaware. But if you tell me you're listening some other way, by Jove, I'll mention that, too. It is the 25th of July. It is Wednesday. It is the middle of the week. Yes, indeed. And a couple of program notes. We're going to be here for a little while longer. We'll be here into next week as well, because there's a lot of work going on here. A lot of knocking on doors, and I thank you very kindly for contacting your members of Congress so that we can then reach out to them. I had a note from our good friend Scott in Sweden. He has contacted the member of the House who would be his representative in Kansas. And I've gotten notes from Colorado talking about Representative Lamborn being contacted. You are taking very seriously this idea that you can have a hand in ending what the New York Times has called Appalachia's agony. What we're talking about is the advancement of a piece of legislation that was introduced June the 19th in the House of Representatives by Louise Slaughter and Representative Dennis Kucinich. None of this ever would have happened without Representative Kucinich. H.R. 5959, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act. You can learn all you could possibly want to know about it by going to AICACT.org. Okay? And we are constantly adding to the list of organizations and people who have signed on in support of the AIC campaign and the AIC Act. As well they should, because this is the single best chance that we have for ending mountaintop removal in Appalachia. giving future generations of Appalachians, you know, Americans, a little bit of hope. A little bit of hope for a non-toxic future. Of course, if you were the toxicity issues do not affect only Appalachia. They affect practically the entire country. It was just last week, I think. Yeah, it was just last week that David Letterman, who ordinarily doesn't go out on a limb with this kind of stuff, could no longer remain silent about what's being done in this country in the name of what does the industry call it? Cheap, affordable, clean natural gas. This was really kind of surprising. You heard this, I trust. If any luck at all, this will roll when I ask it to.
They're poisoning our drinking water, and the EPA said, you know what, you no longer have to comply with EPA standards for stuff you put into the water.
Why?
So the greedy oil and gas company said, great, what? Let's go crazy.
Of course.
And then some states are saying, no, we have a transparency law, so the oil and gas companies say, okay, we'll tell you everything but 2% of what we're putting into your tap water.
Sure.
And that's supposed to make us feel better.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're screwed.
Oh.
I've seen people set fire to their tap water.
Yes, I have.
Can I get you a nice, you want some ice water? Kaboom!
Oh, boy.
I've seen people set fire to their toilets.
Ah, well, that's a different story.
That was a different thing. I was in college. I don't think they still do that. From now on, vodka.
Yeah. That was rather of a seminal moment for David Letterman to bring that up. And I bring that up because here in Washington, D.C., on this Saturday, Ferg and I will be there. My colleague Bo Webb has headed back to the ranch. He'd been here for quite a while and needed to get back home, so he's headed in that direction as we speak. But Ferg and I will be going down to the west lawn of the Capitol this Saturday morning and into Saturday afternoon, and we will be joining with a host of other people of goodwill coming from all over the United States to stand together to demand that they stop being poisoned. And, you know, it makes me really proud that going back to, what was it, September the 27th of 2010, so much of this got started with Appalachia Rising, which, again, Bo Webb was central in putting together. But the fact that finally people began to stand up and say, no, no more. You can't do this to us. It's not okay to poison us and our future and our babies. You can't poison us for your own profits. The planet really is in peril. And David Letterman, for all the cracking wise that he does, he wasn't kidding. We're screwed. Well and truly and really screwed if we don't get busy on the double quick. I had an email today from the lead speaker at Friday or Saturday's anti-fracking rally here in D.C., at which we hope to see thousands upon thousands of people. The lead speaker will be Bill McKibben from 350.org. And I got a blast email today from 350. And it's a sobering reminder of exactly what is going on. The note said, guess what? Well, I'll add the guess what. Keystone XL is back. Oh, no. You know, so the toxic mix that we're dealing with, there's the Keystone XL pipeline, there's fracking all over the country, and there's mountaintop removal. And of the three, mountaintop removal is the poster child for the evil that corporate profiteers are willing to do just to line their own pockets at the expense of our bodies, our hopes, our futures, our children's futures, our progeny in general. But the email said Keystone XL is back. In fact, it never left. Big Oil has been trying everything to get this pipeline built ever since President Obama temporarily rejected it earlier this year. The Keystone Pipeline is a critical link to the Canadian tar sands, North America's largest pool of carbon, which, if developed, would mean, quote, essentially game over, unquote, for the climate, according to NASA's top scientist, Dr. James Hansen. Or in the words of David Letterman, we're screwed. Last year, the climate movement organized to stop the pipeline and forced TransCanada to extreme measures. They broke the pipeline in two, moving forward with the southern half, which doesn't require presidential approval, and resubmitting the northern half, which includes the critical link to the tar sands. Folks along the southern leg are gearing up for some extraordinary direct actions to stop construction when it begins later this summer. The fate of the northern leg is still unknown, though to be honest, the signs aren't very encouraging. Last fall, President Obama promised to consider the climate impacts of the pipeline on any re-review. It's not clear if that promise will be kept. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and the folks at the State Department will make up their minds next week about whether to consider the climate impacts of Keystone XL in their review of the pipeline. How could they not? How could they not consider the climate impacts? If you're actually doing any of this consideration with a functioning brain, how can you not consider the climate impacts? The email to me continues, Keystone XL, many of you may have seen this as well if you're signed up with 350.org. Keystone XL would open the floodgates for tar sands oil, sending 800,000 barrels a day of the dirtiest oil on earth to be exported. And of course, it wouldn't be any less dirty if it was being kept for domestic use. But it is important to note that this, because of the fact that oil is a global market, just like all other hydrocarbons, because it's a global market, it's not going to do a damned thing. 800,000 barrels of oil is a drop in the bucket. It's a very filthy bucket. It's not going to do a damn thing to the cost of gasoline at the pump. 800,000 barrels a day of the dirtiest oil on earth to be exported, creating an enormous carbon footprint. 10 top scientists already sent a letter to the Department of State insisting the climate impacts be considered. And what 350.org would like for you to do is to send a note, send a message to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, demanding that they do consider climate change when reviewing the Keystone XL pipeline. You can go to, this is kind of long, but write it down. act.350.org/letter/keystone-state-climate/. Again, act.350.org/letter/keystone-state-climate/. And the note I have in front of me says, your comment will be automatically submitted to the department from our site but we will also be doing a bulk delivery with our allies in D.C. next week to help underline how many people want to see this pipeline stopped. The note continues. Today is also the second anniversary of the largest tar sands spill in American history, which took place on the Kalamazoo River in Michigan. With that as warning, the Department of State must undertake a comprehensive high-scrutiny review of every aspect of the pipeline. Keystone is the key to unlocking new tar sands production. Planned pipelines heading west and east from the tar sands have run into major opposition, leaving Keystone as one of the last options to export tar sands. This means that Secretary Clinton's decision will be the key to whether we see substantial expansion of the tar sands in the near term. And if the tar sands indeed do mean essentially game over for the climate, as Dr. Hansen noted, well, that seems like something worth thinking about. The 350.org folks do note, once again, the odds and the money of the fossil fuel industry are both against us. We've beaten both before, and we've got to do it again. This is one of those moments where literally the fate of not the nation, but of the world hangs in the balance. And if you go to that address I mentioned, you know, you can do something about it. And that is very important. Very, very important. You know, when stuff is falling apart, it's hard for people to deal with something so that carries so much existential freight. It's hard not to just look away and hope that it doesn't happen in our lifetimes and say, well, you know, after that, who knows? Do you remember when George Bush was asked about what people thought, or when George Bush was asked about how he felt about how history would treat him, and he said, history doesn't matter because we'll all be dead by then. Dick, why are you drinking blood again? Well, if we don't want to be cast in that same light, then we kind of have to do something. And yes, actually writing a letter to the Secretary of State is doing something. If she heard from 20 million Americans, 50 million Americans saying this is a deal breaker, you think that wouldn't impact and affect her decision? How could it not? How could it not? So, you know, this is evidence that the struggle is on every front, because we are being pressed by every front. Whether it's the 700-plus Timothy McVeigh Murrah Federal Building bombs going off every day in Appalachia, or the toxization, is that a word? Toxification of one of the most basic elements of life, water, going on in the fracking industry. Or whether it's the predators with their godforsaken Keystone pipeline. We are under attack on all fronts. And who was the French general in the First World War who said, the enemy is on my left, the enemy is on my right, the enemy is before me. I've got them right where I want them. Attack. Or some such. This is that. This is that reality. Ray writing, and he said, I heard via TV news that a mountaintop removal coal company went bankrupt last week. Is this significant? Or was the aforementioned group of slime just gobbled up by bigger slime? That was Patriot Coal. And it is significant. But they went bust because they were horribly, horribly mismanaged. Share prices for coal companies are tumbling. Down, you know, from $30 and $40 a share down to $9.29, folks. Come on down to Big Coal's house of stock. But it hasn't made them stop. And the thing is, if the price ever goes back up, and it will, then they'll be doing it with even more reckless abandon unless we get it stopped. Because if you think about, for instance, the report that we talked about last week that shows the number of mountaintop removal sites that are exporting coal to places like China, India, Russia, some European nations, South Africa. Well, then you begin to understand the nature of the problem. When demand goes up, the mountains will go down unless we stop it. It's tough. It's hard enough to fight a two-front war. And as much as I hate martial analogies, this is a three-front one. We've got to battle them over the tar sands. We've got to battle them over fracking. We've got to battle them over mountaintop removal in Appalachia. Maybe four fronts, because consider the expansion of the Powder River Basin coal industry and the 1,000-mile-long train track they want to build from there to the American Northwest coast, where they will build vast and giant shipping terminal to ship coal to China. We have our work cut out for us, but who wants to participate in an easy struggle? But in short, Patriot will reorganize, Ray, and they will be back. Oh, thanks. Thanks, Ray. You sound as good as home. We've tinkered with this quite a bit, and hopefully it will stay that way. If I didn't mention, I should have. You remember when the little Belgian bastard stole my backpack back in May? Yeah. In it was my favorite traveling microphone, my Shure Beta 58. And what you're hearing this come over now is the Beta 58 that Horst kindly had shipped along to replace the one that's missing, so that I don't sound
like I'm broadcasting through a tin can.
This is a great microphone. I think this is the one that they used to advertise by showing it submerged in a mug of beer. It's a hell of a thing to do to a mug of beer. Put a microphone in it. Yeah. Now, we're going to get into the meat of the program here presently, but I wanted to get all of that information out there so that we wouldn't think that this isn't entertainment. This is real conversation, real discussion, real dialogue. And I don't think I got to mention it last night, but we did, thanks to two kind contributions, we did meet Sal's Titanic Tuesday challenge. So that was magnificent and wonderful news. And the fact of the matter is, as we cruise downhill toward the end of the month, we find ourselves only about $250 out from actually getting out of July with our hide intact. So that's incredibly inspiring. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. And here at 25 minutes past the hour, 25 minutes into the program, I want to make a little announcement. You know, I never come to Washington, D.C., but I think about my dear friend and great colleague, comrade, Guy James. Guy is down in his secure, undisclosed location in Florida. And I was messaging with him last night because I can't come to Washington, D.C., as noted, without thinking of Guy. And so I just dropped him a note to tell him that I was up here again and what kind of work we were doing. And he wrote and said he was really thrilled to hear it. And so we continued chatting back and forth. And I said, you know, why don't we have a conversation on air? I know people would love to hear from you. He said, that'd be fun. So there we have it. Guy James will join us for a conversation, and your conversation, your dialogue, your discussion, this Friday, at the very beginning of Friday on the Front Porch, kind of the ultimate Friday on the Front Porch. Guy James in Florida, me here in D.C., and you in all the multiplicity of places that you are chatting and talking away. Agnes and I will work some with the phones to make sure that whole thing works. But, yeah, there's tremendous potential there. So make sure you're here for Friday on the Front Porch Live and check in not just with me, but with Guy James. I mean, Guy is legendary. Guy is, well, there's nobody else. There is nobody like Guy James. And I'm looking forward to talking to him this Friday evening. Ah, thank you, News Ninja Susan. General Ferdinand Foch to General Joffre during the Battle of the Marne, 1914. Hard pressed on my right, my left is in retreat, my center is yielding, impossible to maneuver, situation excellent, I'm attacking. Attack. That's the one. Funny how it's always the left that's in retreat. But yeah, that's where we find ourselves. Okay, Agnes, why have you signed out, dear? Are you back yet? Gosh, I sure hope so. No, you're not. Anybody know where Agnes went? I feel all lost without her. And that's not me being a smartass. We've got a lot to go into this evening. Yes, I think we will have to talk about our... Jesus. I think we're going to have to talk about our Anglo-Saxon heritage. Jesus, God, did you hear this? Dr. John writing in, Mitt and Anglo-Saxon heritage. I mean, this is enough to make a freight train take a dirt road. There's somewhat confused reports of someone in the Romney camp saying Obama doesn't get our Anglo-Saxon heritage. Because now Willard is out there, because this was all over the series of tubes earlier today, that the Romney camp that had said that, well, you know, he just doesn't understand what it means to be an Anglo-Saxon. Screw him, I'm a Jute. The Jutes never get the press that the Angles and the Saxons get. But Dr. John says, talk about your arbitrary starting point. Don't you know it just burns him and the tea crackers up inside to know that we're all Africans, which we are? That's where humanity was born. Well, I mean, you know, but not Willard. Come on. Well, and again, reformed Egyptian. I guess that started in Africa, too. Planet Kolob. Planet Kolob. Spaceship money. Yeah. But no, the ABC News report says that now this language is being disavowed. The Romney campaign, according to ABC News, with Diane Sawyer, today denied any connection to anonymous aides. It's pitiful, isn't it? Anonymous aides who spoke to a British paper about Romney's appreciation for Anglo-Saxon heritage. I mean, why not just go ahead and finish it all off and say, not to mention our Aryan superiority? Willard has gone to London for the Olympics. And the Telegraph of London, which is, of course, a Murdoch paper, reported that a pair of Willard's advisors, who were described as the Foreign Policy Advisory Team, said that President Obama couldn't fully understand the Anglo-Saxon heritage between the U.S. and Britain. You know, when you're doing that, you're just not far from putting on the bed sheet and throwing the pillowcase over your head. I mean, at that point in time, you start talking about purity of essence. And Peter Sellers starts jumping out of wheelchairs, yelling, "Mein Führer, I can walk!" The quote in the Telegraph was as follows: "We are part of an Anglo-Saxon heritage, and he, Romney, feels that the special relationship is special." Really? Is that kind of like the trees being just the right height? The White House didn't fully appreciate the shared history we have. Well, of course not, because, you know, he's from Africa. He's a Kenyan Muslim with an anti-colonialist bias and a deep-seated hatred of white people. Do we count the Celts in among the Anglo-Saxons? Because I don't think we do. And as far as Angles and Saxons are concerned, back before we had teenagers and my hair turned all white and stuff, it was kind of red. Which sort of indicates that somewhere along the way, my folks left Scandinavia in hope, in constant search. That's the way it is, genetic. It's down through the ages. My forebears and all the way down to me keep trying to get to somewhere where it's not so goddamn cold. And I guess in comparison, you know, Scandinavia versus Scotland. Well, okay, we got 5 degrees here, Olaf. Let's stop for a few centuries. Anglo-Saxon heritage. Is there a Doomsday Book of Mormon? Oh, no, that's just a Doomsday Book. Here's some more of the quote from one of the advisors. Obama is a left winger. Really? Could have fooled me. He hasn't been at the meetings. He doesn't value the NATO alliance as much. He's very comfortable with American decline, and the traditional alliances don't mean as much to him. He wouldn't like singing Land of Hope and Glory, another advisor told the paper. What is that? And did the speed in ancient times walk upon England's shore? Oh, you said mattress again. So Willard's gone to the Olympics. We kind of wish he would stay there. We don't know whether he's going to actually get to... I mean, is he going to get to watch Anne's horse jump? Be a real shame, wouldn't it, not to go all the way to England and strap your horse to the top of the Gulfstream 5, not get to watch it jump or dance or ballet or whatever it is that horse does. Oh, we got a lot of stuff out there tonight. We've been kind of tied up with other things lately. But being as how the Olympics are on us, I thought a little bit of commentary might be in order. This is a brilliant mashup of conservative London Mayor Boris Johnson's Welcome to the Olympics cassette boy on Twitter. CASSETTEBOY, cassette boy on Twitter. Pulled this together, and it's freaking brilliant. Enjoy.
Oh, no. No, no, no. Jesus. God. Something nasty is going to happen to you.
Welcome to the so-called Games.
It was the beginning of a dark age, a kind of cringe-making clash of civilizations. The peoples of the earth sailed into the mouth of the Thames, a place of mud and illiteracy and embarrassing diseases. London built this superdome in which there took place entertainments which seemed shocking and depraved. Exactly the same experience as English public school. The games began with piles of whitened bones and horses' heads and the skulls of men nailed to trees and a packet of chocolate digestive biscuits with bells on.
What else do you need? That's about it, isn't it?
Imagine the colossal expense of constructing the kind of endless higgledy-piggledy encampment full of prostitutes and peddlers and what have you in honor of one of the biggest thugs and creeps in world history. What kind of men were they who built this? People with no recorded flair for architecture or the graphic arts, but that didn't matter. The essential point of the games was to provide propaganda. It sends out the worst possible signal. The games were so abundantly supplied with the luxuries of the earth, you'll be sure of a big burger. So it was a way of saying to everybody in the world,
yes.
Look, get some burgers, or else you get eaten by bears.
Yes.
The games was the whore of Babylon. And that was telling them. Crikey.
I hate Sebastian Coe.
Yeah, so there's your introduction to the Olympics from London right-wing mayor Boris Johnson. Do enjoy them, Willard. Enjoy them immensely. Revel in your Anglo-Saxon heritage, even though your grandfather was an illegal immigrant from Mexico. You reckon that's what's behind all of this? Trying to make sure that nobody points out again that Willard is the grandson of an illegal immigrant? Because they stirred up so much hate among the right-wingers that the bare mention of the Mexican issue would probably drive people in Arizona into paroxysms of absolute fury. Anglo-Saxon heritage, my ass. Yeah, Dr. John, I suspect you're correct. He's sucking up to the British, considering the monarchy's a bunch of bloody Germans. Mittens is definitely not counting your people, nor mine, Bob. Us folks with Southern European heritage are a little too swarthy for his liking. We probably don't get passes to the spaceship either, John. It's 100-year mission to explore strange new worlds and populate them with, oh dear, Oh, by the way, just because my mind works so strangely, I was wondering, because, again, this is one of those I wouldn't bet on it. I wouldn't put money on it if I was trying to bet against it. What do you reckon the odds are that the Mormons have already baptized the dead from the Aurora Massacre? Anybody want to take that bet? Because I wouldn't. I almost guarantee they already have. Ugh. That's almost too awful to contemplate. But no. Despite the fact that the quotes were really, really there and they were really, really said, now the Romney camp said, "Well, that didn't really get said. We disavow and wish that the tapes would all sort of self-destruct in 10 seconds. Can we make that happen, please?" Our Anglo-Saxon heritage. Why won't the Romney campaign just go straight up, full on, Blazing Saddles? The sheriff, what did he say? He said the sheriff's near. The president's a ding, ding. Yeah, he's one of those blah people. Oh, Rick Santorum, where are you when we need you? Just say it, Willard. We know you're dying to. Yeah, your church only decided that people with skin darker than a paper bag had souls and could go to white Mormon heaven as something other than servants. Well, he only did that, 25 years ago? We understand. Old habits and old notions, old prejudices, old filth, old bigotry. Well, it all dies hard, doesn't it, Willard? And for some of you, it isn't dead at all. Oh, Ron and Raleigh writing in. This is good to know. He said Sam Cedar mentioned the AIC Act in passing on his program the day before yesterday. However, he didn't seem to be fully aware of its content. You may want to shoot him an email to let him know what it's all about. I may do that. Might have better luck tweeting at him. Lots of folks pay attention to their Twitter feed more than their email now. And it's really a little bit simpler, especially when it sort of just rolls into your phone. Oh, no. We've got a jillion things to get into this evening. And not least of which is the fact that, well, yeah, I talked about the fact that it's Wednesday. But Wednesday means something to us here at the Horn that it doesn't necessarily mean to everybody else. Wednesday, of course, means prayer meeting. It's prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And, I don't know, consider this, since we're broadcasting away from the studio, an evangelical revival. How's that? Yeah. It is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn, so I think it's probably a good idea for us to go ahead and pass the plate around, little PayPal button in the bottom there, with every head bowed and every eye closed. As the plate passes and the Minister of Music leads us in song, Brother Minister of Music, if you would come forward, please, for this Wednesday prayer meeting on the Horn.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got.
prison for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, he's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the sermon on the mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD. $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah. Solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity, yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, mares, you dotes and dozy dotes and little lambs, you davy, a kiddly davy too. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? I am Brother Bob Kincaid. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense. It's Wednesday prayer meeting here on the Horn. Come on down that blood red aisle. I don't want to yell and get all wrought up because you never know who's on the next side of the walls here. It's not quite like being in the home cathedral, but come on down that blood red aisle and fall on your knees in front of the altar and put your hands on the subwoofer and feel him heal and raise a common sense, brother and sister, flowing through you from the server on high. Hallelujah, glory. Oh, I tell you what, we got stories coming up for you from Brother Brian Fisher over at the American Family Association. I actually ran into a fellow from Mississippi last night who told me he was from Tupelo, Mississippi, and I said, home of the American Family Association. And he said, don't remind me, brother, don't remind me. But yes, we've got that all coming. But right now, I'm told that we've got Sandra on the line. And Agnes, if you would please connect us. Have I got you?
Hello?
Oh, there you are, Sandra.
Hey. So did you by any chance read Thomas Friedman's article today?
I don't know. I guess I didn't read him, but I read this beautiful parody of him.
Well, I mean, no, it's just that this is like one line at the end. He says, he's talking about Syria. Without an external midwife or Syrian Mandela, the fires of conflict could burn for a long time. I guess the midwife in Iraq was America. I mean, a midwife and an Arab Mandela? God, I mean, it's just, he's high. That dude is high. He needs to move out of his Legoland, that house he lives in, and do something, because I can't believe how absurd he is and that he's on the pages of the New York Times. That's embarrassing. It's just really wrong. It's a horrific article, incoherent.
Well, this piece Flavio sent it along to me, Sandra, and it came from the American Prospect. And Flavio said that he thought he had busted a rib in the process of reading it. I wish there was somebody out there who could do a good Thomas Friedman impression, because you know how they've got that bad Hemingway contest that they have every year where people write, you know, crazy-sounding Hemingway sort of stuff? Well, apparently, yeah. Doing bad Friedman has become a part of it. I mean, and what you just cited is precisely the subject matter of this. This parodist says, "I was changing planes at the new airport in Jakarta the other day on the way to Stockholm from Vladivostok. Three young Bangladeshi boys sat in the passenger lounge watching the Power Rangers on satellite TV. Their mother, garbed in the traditional sari, talked to her cousin, a migrant worker who sold German-designed Walkman knockoffs in Hong Kong on a shiny new Samsung cell phone. Sitting to one side of them was a young Chinese emigre on his way to Toronto to work for a software company, and on the other a business-suited Rastafarian making a connection to Bratislava. Meanwhile, a couple of Tuareg tribesmen sat cross-legged in front of the ticket counter cooking yams over a flaming mound of ticket stubs. Isn't that just him?
I mean, it's just, you know, the random help that's always around to chat to him about the glories of globalization. It's just, you know, it's mind-numbing, and it's just too weird. I mean, he's horrifying. Is that a parody or was that a direct quote?
No, that's a parody, but the thing is, it's almost too close. It sounds exactly like him. It's written by a person under the pen name of Thomas Free Trade Man.
Oh, okay. Well, here's a direct quote. And for me, the lesson of Iraq is quite simple. You can't go from Saddam to Switzerland without getting stuck in Hobbes, a war of all against all, unless you have a well-armed external midwife whom everyone on the ground both fears and trusts to manage the transition. In Iraq, that was America. I mean, I wish I was Morgan Freeman, boy, be on and cracking. But I'm not. So you know, there you have it.
I've got a teenager here who does a stunningly good Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, well, I know, but you know what I mean. I mean, this is, so that was a real, you know, that's crazy talk. That is some crazy talk, and he needs to get help.
Where's this? Has the Iraq debacle been so? I mean, is that the way we are now that we just forget it a couple of years later? Midwife, broker, who says that was successful?
No, but I don't like, you know, don't bring in any sort of any allusions to women at all and all this shit. You see what I'm saying? I'm like, oh, no, fool.
No, because, you know, birth is a positive, birth is nurturing, healthy, wholesome. Civil War isn't.
No, and you know, don't bring in Mandela either. Leave him be. You see what I'm saying? It's just too much. He's just awful. Anyway, I couldn't resist, so I just thought, my God.
I got to go see this when the show's over, because it's a screamer.
And the thing is, and the other thing that's killing me is, you know, this Romney, they can't even help themselves with their dog whistle and the sort of, it's just like teeming with, you know, racism now. That's it's just straight up. It's like, wait a minute, the special relationship, you mean the relationship where the English were able to bring over 100 million Negroes over here, that special relationship? Please, Jesus, do not let this man get anywhere near the White House.
Oh, that's why I said what I said, Sandra. I mean, how far are they now from talking about Aryan purity?
Well, it's just, I mean, you know, I'm thinking he's going to bring the Winston Churchill bust to the White House. I mean, can you imagine Winston Churchill having any kind of dealings with someone like Romney anyway? It would be fun to watch, you know? How dare he even invoke the man's name? I just, Mitt Romney is just, he's sick. He's horrible. With his tax haven, I mean, he's and I shudder that he's like almost tied with Obama at every poll I look at, and I'm just thinking, wow, you know, I don't even know what's going on, if it's just the corporate media running that game. I just find it hard to believe that people are warmed up to this man enough to vote him in. I'm sorry.
You got to hear this, Sandra. This just came in from Dr. John. He said, a well-armed external midwife? What, a matron with an Uzi? What the f*** is he talking about? And then this is precious. Send that fool to a padded room in Patagonia with undocumented Sri Lankan nurses force-feeding him knockoff Adderall made in a Barbados factory staffed by Taiwanese guest workers.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, no, it's just I'm seeing that whole, man, of course I don't know, have you seen The Borges? Haven't seen any of that show?
Yeah, I saw a couple of episodes.
Well, you know, my favorite scene when Home Chick is up there talking about, well, you can go ahead and kill that sub because right here, and she pointing to, you know, where I can make plenty more. Is that the kind of midwife he's talking? I mean, what's going on? It's too much. And I find him just tedious now with the racial stuff, you know?
Well, I wonder who, does anybody, who, because apparently the New York Times wouldn't let him keep writing, who takes him seriously? I mean, he self-parodies now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's, you know, I mean, this particular one is, I don't know if you have to, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if he's doing opium now or, you know, or what's going on, but...
But also, isn't that code for I want to bomb Syria? Doesn't that sound like he wants to go and get into Syria?
Well, yeah, no, I'm sure. But I mean, this is the same one who was talking about suck on, you know, rifles and stuff. You know, when they break down the doors and stuff in Iraq. Remember all that?
Oh yeah, it was madness.
You know, it's just crazy talk with. Oh, 6 months and 6 months and 6 months. That guy, I mean, that's him. That's all he does.
Yeah, the one where we kept turning corners that were just more corners.
Yeah, and the corner. It is a parody, along with his Lexus and an Olive BS that goes on night and day. I mean, he's really, it's a joke, you know? I mean, it's just a joke. And I don't know. I don't even mean to dominate the conversation with Friedman, but it's just, it's like,
no,
I don't know what.
I walk around here, and I won't reference any street sweepers or anything, but I walk around here, and there are people, serious people in serious suits and talking serious stuff, and you can just look at them and know that they pick up the paper, and they read Friedman, and they go, oh, he's smart.
Well, isn't Obama a fan of that madness, too?
I think so.
And that horror show, that's David Brooks and his famous stuff, his ongoing drama is that the underclass, they just don't really get how they should be, you know, doing what the aristocrats say. If they would just do that, then everything would be okay. I mean, that's his whole story these days. It's like, damn, you need to check yourself in. But I must share this with you. I just stumbled upon it. Rick Santorum's tweets. Three older kids, I guess his kids, just joined us at Chick-fil-A. They like Chick-fil-A sauce on everything. Rick Santorum and sauce and his support of Chick-fil-A. OMG, okay?
Well, but you know what? These people don't do anything. Yeah, I feel bad about that. These people. No, they don't do anything that isn't coordinated. It's interesting you would bring that up because Brian Fisher, you know, that white-headed old freak from the American Family Association that wants all the grizzly bears to be killed for Jesus, that guy?
I've heard the name, but... I'll take your word for it, guys.
He's a lunatic, and you know that Mike Huckabee started the other day on Fox saying that all the good Christians should go to Chick-fil-A. Well, Brian Fisher has picked up on that, and he says that, and he's coined a phrase, too. He says, Big Gay is trying to go Ahmadinejad on Chick-fil-A, and they want them wiped off the face of the map.
Okay, well, I just don't need to hear about any sauces, though. And Santorum and his voice. I don't need to hear all that. And the tweets are hilarious. I mean, you know, stand with us. You know what I mean? No. And they take themselves so seriously, they can't really see that it's just hysterical.
And they've got a campaign, Sandra. It's an August 1st campaign. They're going to try to eat all the chicken at all the Chick-fil-A's in America.
Great, you know, I suppose. Wow. Well, it's just, yeah, anyway, I don't... is that a Mike Huckabee? He has a radio show, right? I mean, have you heard any of it?
He's on Fox, too, and yeah, but I think it was on Fox where he said that it's up to good Christians to support Chick-fil-A for their principled stand for traditional family values.
Oh, God. Well, you know, remember when we heard day in and day out how Ann Romney is their secret weapon? Well, shit, she's been turned into a bit of a nightmare. They need to shut her down with her What? You people seen all you need to see. I'm still stuck on that story. I know it's been a few days, but I was like gobsmacked. I'm like, no, she did not go Anne Marie Antoinette on us with that one. That was a good one.
Yeah, and she and the thing is they don't get why you people. And of course, when I guess you know, trying to explain bigotry to bigots is always a challenge. But they don't understand why you people is offensive.
Well, I just know she's offensive, and you know, don't get too close to that horse. You know what I'm saying? Yikes! You know, she's a nightmare. You know, we've given enough to you people out there. I mean, they're so entitled. God damn, it's just a reek of it. Horrible.
Right, and that's what they were trying to get across. Is she was not trying to be racist in all of this, Sandra. She despises everyone who doesn't have as much money as she does.
Oh, well, the you people fit perfectly well with you know, the sort of 1% as it does with, you know, the sort of racial connotation. It's everyone got it. Nobody was talking about race in that, but you people, as soon as you hear that, you know it means what it means, you know? It's kind of self-explanatory, that one.
Everybody who doesn't have a car elevator, as far as I can tell, and you know, you've started trouble here. I just got a note in from Ron in Raleigh. He says, "Sauce, you say? Hey, Bob, is that sauce a frothy mixture?"
Oh, that's what I mean. It's like he really needs to stay solid. Stay solid, Rick. Because otherwise it gets real dicey. Listen, I really don't have anything that serious because I am just so, you know, burnt out on just the horror show, especially the environmental stuff. It's really doing my head in. Did you see that story of, like, the sort of flash melting of Greenland? Hello?
Yeah, Greenland is falling into the ocean like icicles falling off of a roof.
But they were saying the last time that event happened was in 1859. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of doing my head in because you don't, you know, it's not discussed. Nothing is, there's no connected dots, you know, in public discourse in this country, nothing.
It's like that note I had from the 350 folks that I began the show with. Hillary Clinton has not decided, Sandra, whether or not the state is going to consider climate change effects in the... How can they not? You know, I said that.
I know, I couldn't even believe when you were talking about that. It just is mind-numbing, right along with, oh, by the way, this 50-year drought and people saying, well, you remember the last time food prices went up? You know, it was mass unrest. And so we have that to look forward to, along with high prices here. They're thinking that, no, it could cause a severe unrest around the world again.
Well, it could re-tank the economy. It could and you know, hungry people get real cranky real quick, don't they?
Yeah, 60% of the, I guess, our arable areas are, like, suffering this drought. You know, and you know the whole discussion with climate change and how the food basket of the world was going to be north. It's going to be in Canada. Well, that shit seems to be playing out on some levels if the crops are being this badly affected so quickly, you know? Wow.
Yeah. But unfortunately, Sandra, those places where, who was it, the head of ExxonMobil said, well, you know, we'll just move food production to where it's nice. Well, unfortunately, that area is presently toxic from all of the tar sands crap that's already been done.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it's just, I don't know, I just was reading a quick article about the drought conditions. I mean, it sounds, you know, incredible.
Well, 87% and 88% of the soybean and corn crop in this country is presently in some form of drought.
Right.
I mean, that when you run up against numbers like that, you start talking about, you know, you use biblical words like famine.
Well, and you have to, I mean, because, you know, the way they sort of are able to give a quote, more precise measurement of population, say, in China, because, you know, the numbers are always questionable from the state government there, is the CIA and the sale of grains, you know, the use of grains in China. So instead of having 1 billion people, you know, they estimate that China has closer to 1.5 billion, right? And they use the grain that they eat as the way of measuring it. But so if you can imagine what's happening in places there where are there so many people that need to eat. I'm just talking about in terms of social unrest. You know, people are moaning about China. Oh, my God, they're only going to grow 7% instead of 25%. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but you know what I'm saying. So I'm thinking, well, shit, bump that. What about trying to feed the 700 million peasants that are, like, there, you know, needing to eat?
I understand exactly what you're talking about. I think, as I mentioned to Jim, that I've been reading Barbara Tuchman's A Distant Mirror, and it's fascinating to go wandering around through the 14th century because, as Barbara Tuchman noted, there were a lot of similarities. And in the years following the plague, holy cow, the possibilities for parallels are stunning and frightening.
Well, but
yeah, you got to remember, as you have noted, there is an element of folks out there who are still waiting for the big die-off.
Well, and there's also, I mean, if you talk about, I forget the name of the book, it's all about climate catastrophes that happened during the time of Ulysses S. Grant in China and whatnot, too. I mean, there's a long sort of documented history of, you know, sort of die-offs. And, I mean, you know, all those places where, you know, those people need to eat, and they can't. I don't know. I just don't. You know, I forgot that the U.S. is like sort of a number one exporter of food, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, here's just a practical application of what we're talking about. I just heard from Cowgirl in the chat room. Of course, she's up in North Dakota. She said, we have maybe one third of our normal hay production and all of our corn cooked and is gone.
See, that's, I'm sorry, that's, wow. But in the meanwhile, a nice article about the, brace yourself, $21 trillion that's stashed offshore. Have you seen that? That's story.
I saw a reference to that.
$21 trillion, and probably like 10 of it is from the U.S. So basically, as much as a GDP is sort of stashed by these parasites, I'm thinking Marines, Medley, I'm thinking, what's the military for? And they need the tax. You see, the whole thing with the tax havens is secrecy. Well, when I read a big headline in The Guardian, $21 trillion offshore, I'm thinking, well, that's not very secret anymore, is it?
Not hardly. Not hardly.
So then the next step is for these governments to exercise their power as nation states.
Right, I was going to say, doesn't sovereignty come and play in this somewhere along the way?
And tax it. I mean, I just, you know, the whole thing is reaching the point of absurdity now where it's just slapping you in the face, and you're going to have people telling the old and the sick and the retired to what? Fuck you. You can just die now because...
Right. We're back to Alan Grayson land. Die quickly.
Yeah, so, but you know what I mean? It's just kind of, it's all so blatant and just out of control. That's a lot of money to be offshored. And it's really hard to wrap your head around offshore. I'm thinking Bishop and Grenada. And how long did it take for Reagan to sort that out?
Oh, that happened pretty quick.
Well, I'm just thinking. It's like, are we seriously supposed to believe that the money is offshore and there's no way that international whatever can't organize a means of taxing some of that or putting capital controls in and stopping its money from moving? Come on.
At one point in time, the Swiss government would tell us to piss up a rope if we asked about who the accounts were, but we sure put pressure on them and made them, and they came around and dropped the dime on a few illicit depositors. I mean, it can be done.
Well, I have vague memories of Malaysia. Oh, wow, Malaysia didn't suffer in the Asian financial crisis because, ooh, they put up capital controls and said, screw you. And as a result of that action, they fared fairly well.
Well,
and
you can't have this conversation. You can't have this conversation without also bringing up, as you did, I think, last week, Iceland.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm just saying the state, you know, I know Westphalia is under attack, you know what I mean, with the Eurozone and all these other sort of super organizations that are hovering above the nation state. But, you know, Westphalia is still here. It still can be utilized if, you know, you have the political will, because everything is becoming political now. The economics of it is falling away because the solutions are there. It's just not happening because of the weak and the concentration of the money interest, I guess. I don't know.
But it's still, no matter how, you know, no matter the questions, especially from the 90s, about whether or not the Westphalian model and the Osnab model were still valid, it is still the defining paradigm of how we operate, and has been for, what, 400 or 500 years now?
Well, so, 1640, whatever, 42.
Yeah, 1648, something like that, wasn't
it? Yeah, when that came to be. But, yeah, I understand what you're saying. But, no, I just mean, you know, you're looking at this slow train wreck in Europe where I keep waiting. I'm thinking, shit, Spain has such an amazing, rich history, and they're going to let themselves be punked out like this? They need to threaten and say, we're going to go back to, what did they have? What was their currency? I don't even remember.
Peso.
They have enough pull because of the size of their economy to really say, you know what? No, we're about to go out. Either you do something, come to Jesus, or we're going to go. And I'm sitting there thinking, I don't understand what's going on, because Greece can't do shit. But Spain and Italy? No, they could bring the whole thing to a complete stop. Germany with their, I don't know what's going on with their attitude. But anyway, I just think the Spanish is being, they're being eaten alive. You know, I don't know if you've noticed with their 7.5% borrowing cost is not sustainable. You have every other state now demanding a bailout within Spain.
And one of the questions I wanted to ask you, Sandra, and I was glad to see that you called in this evening, because I keep following all of this LIBOR stuff, and lo and behold, you know, we were out working on Capitol Hill today, and here are these damned LaRouche people out there, and, you know, I think they had some poster about wanting to flay the skin off of Tim Geithner, which is not necessarily something that I would fight with them over, but they can, you know, because they're so lunatic, they take all the credibility from these financial arguments and just throw them in the rubbish. But what I wanted to ask you about is when we look at the number that was done on Greece and what's coming with Italy and Spain, God knows Portugal and Ireland, is there an interplay with all this LIBOR skullduggery between that and the bailouts?
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm not even going to attempt to answer, because I mean, I find the whole LIBOR thing, you know, it's really complicated, and it's also, why is it, you know, it's still in effect, you know, so I guess it's just sort of interconnected, you know, this is where the politics comes in again, because I don't really see anything being changed, and we're supposed to just accept that every morning at 11, that number they come up with is okay now all of a sudden?
Right, and I mean, that's what I don't understand. It seems like the evidence is there, everything's pretty well clear, that the whole game is just it's rigged from the beginning to the end, from Alpha to Omega.
Right.
And everybody, but then we go on and we have these news stories that are especially financial stories that are centered on a system that is now obviously gamed, and we're just supposed to pretend that. I don't even know what we're supposed to pretend anymore.
Well, this is my argument all the time too. It's like, well, wait, when is it going to dawn on people that, ooh, fuck you, I'm not paying nothing back? You see what I'm saying? You know, this whole idea that, oh, my credit rating will get, well, listen, this, you know, I just, you know, the cities are starting to make noise. All this business with, like, Oakland taking on Goldman Sachs, they have a lot more leverage now with this LIBOR thing. So you're going to see other cities, because I've been hearing about different lawsuits and different whatevers, to use the LIBOR mess to get themselves out of these various agreements. So, but the idea of that unwinding, I'm not too sure what's, you know, it could lead to some complete collapse and cratering of the system, which I think is why we're supposed to pretend that it's just okay. You know, market to magic, as I like to say.
Yeah, because the cratering is not going to be any one country. This is an exposure of the entire system, isn't it?
It's suggesting that, you know. I mean, this is what's going on, and especially anyone who has any sort of long-term, and I'm speaking in terms of, you know, baby boomers now, the LIBOR thing has probably decimated, you know, your potential earnings already because it's been scammed for so many years. You see what I mean? So how are you going to try to recoup that loss is anybody's guess.
Yeah, you know what I was thinking of, and I was right along those lines. You remember when the right-wingers had a hissy about the Lilly Ledbetter case because the right-wing rats threw her out of the Supreme Court saying that she should have known she was being ripped off by the company? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, does the same argument apply now to folks who were ripped off in the system? Yeah. I mean,
This is the right. You hit it on the head. This is what the right wing argument is percolating now about LIBOR. They're trying to blame the borrower. You got it. That's right. You know exactly how they operate because that is the sort of arguments that are coming out of the various think tanks now. It's somehow you know, Granny's fault because.
Oh my God.
So yeah, no, you know how it is. Yeah, you. You may not know, but intuitively you always know because it's always the same. I'm sorry to say.
Blame the victim?
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't really know. I mean, I think the LIBOR thing is, you know, I think it's a huge, huge deal. And, what tells me that it is to see that smarmy Geithner, he is turning inside out over it. I mean, he's a crook. Remember when he was brought up and he had the tax thing? We were all screaming, oh, my God, how are you going to confirm this crook? So it's fixed. It's already fixed, you know, because he's a straight-up, I don't know if he would be Robert Duvall. I don't know what. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do understand what you're saying. But you know, I saw that inquiry out there earlier today about, you know, did the New York Fed act in a time? Because the New York Fed knew about the LIBOR thing and said nothing.
No, and they're trying to, like, run this game, at least in England. I'm sure they'll be doing it real quickly here, that, well, this was necessary to preserve the system. You know what? Let's destroy the whole world to preserve the system. You see what I'm saying? I just think that's how absurd the whole thing is getting. But, you know, we're in bigger trouble here because I'm so concerned with, you know, how well they've suppressed the vote. I don't know what's going to happen in November, but it looks like millions of people will be thinking they're voting, but it's not going to count. So that's a problem.
Absolutely. And what is it? One of the Willard advisors said, you know, this could be very important for us in the case of a close vote. And, yeah, really? Yeah, I wonder why.
Well,
I wonder.
There's some people really concerned, though, about if we do have a really close election. You know what I mean? They don't really see... They see some big, you know, they see problems. Anaheim-type problems.
Oh, I've been reading about that. You know, I saw the footage of those cops laughing.
You know, let's just shoot up two people within an hour, you know, within a few hours between them. And then when the people get upset, let's stick dogs and rubber bullets and you know, a whole nine yards. It's like, did they forget that there's cameras and media and stuff? Because the Anaheim police is looking about really messed up right now. They're not getting a very good showing.
No. And, well, I don't... The question is the degree to which they can suppress this information, because that Ustream broadcast out there, I guess it went up and fell, went up and came down like lickety split, but somebody preserved it.
Yeah.
That showed those cops.
I've seen loads of footage, and it's been going on for days. You know this, right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, once again, let's remind folks that these four people have been protesting for weeks. Okay, so we have a case of shoot up all our family members and all our people in the community, and we'll protest for a while, try to get some redress. Then you keep shooting them, and then the thing explodes, and people are like, oh, what's going on, you know?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
When you know it's a buildup, and people have just sort of had enough. But anyway, I'm not, you know, I don't really know... I think they're bringing the feds in or some madness like that, but that's not very reassuring for those people, I bet.
I'm guessing not. And, you know, I thought it was kind of interesting that I was just joking when I suggested that the Paterno statute would come down, but my God, it's gone.
Oh, right. That's, you know, I wanted to ask you because, I don't know if you saw that Dave Zirin, you know, made a really good point about, well, wait a minute, why is this private entity, you know, extracting $60 million from a public institution? I thought, ooh, snap.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really interesting observation, you know.
Well, I'm convinced he's about as good as it comes.
Yeah,
but, you know, there's a whole... I found it interesting, though, that of all the things the NCAA could have done, they did not tell them no television.
Well, no, that's another thing that was brought up, that is, of course... But I do think the sort of private-public sphere is a good angle because you're like, yeah, right, what is this, you know? And we're not talking about private-on-private. We're talking about institutions that get all kinds of federal dollars, right?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean,
okay, and for this one entity to demand $60 million, you know, what about the girls' sports and the other sports and whatnot that's there? What the hell?
Well, yeah, and by the way, speaking of women's sports, this kind of has to come. This has to be addressed. Have you heard this? This outrage or this? Well, it's just God about the athletes traveling to the Olympics.
No, I don't. You know, I'm so tuned out of that. I can't deal with the Olympics. Why? What is this about?
The Japanese women's soccer team and the Australian women's soccer team and basketball teams were relegated to economy class flight while their male counterparts flew business.
And this is from their home countries?
Yeah. To the London Olympics.
From Australia too, huh?
Yeah. I mean...
Oh, you know, wow, that's...
I mean, women's teams are higher ranked in the world. The Australian women's teams are higher ranked than the men's team in the world. But the women flew back in steerage while the men... got the leg room up in business class.
Wow.
I can't wait to hear
that. Just fly together. I don't really understand.
Well, yeah, business class is expensive.
Well, okay. Well, that's, yeah, you know, but the London thing is, you know, the only thing I may check out, because I've heard rumors that the shit is so unorganized, it's going to be a disaster. The opening ceremonies, and they're concerned about the weather because, ooh, they have nothing to cover the arena where they're... I mean, it just sounds like a real mess over there, and, you know, people are protesting. They're freaking out because, you know, about the Z lanes. You know what Z lanes are?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Soviet Union, when special people had their lanes. Well, they're pulling that bullshit in London now, and they started making the Z lanes. You should have seen the traffic. I'm talking about Croydon. I mean, I know London, so if you go from, like, central London to Croydon, you know, it's like an hour and 10 minutes. That shit is taking 5 hours now.
No.
Yeah, people are already... Someone described it as, like, being locked in a basement and not being able to share on the $60 door that they're charging to get into the party. And that's you.
Well, that's why I ran that mashup of Boris Johnson there. I thought that was hilarious.
Right, and so everybody I know in London, you know, I got an email from a friend. They're like, man, Yorkshire is nice now. They out. They gone. Okay?
I know.
They are in Leeds or wherever else they can go to, you know? Because it just sounds like it's, like I called it the Armed Surveillance Circus. That's my name for the London Olympics.
Well, it could be, it does. It looks like it's got all the potential in the world to be a real mess.
Well, they have missiles on people's roofs and shit. These poor people were like, can you please not put anti-aircraft missiles on top of our roofs, please? They went to court, and the court said, no, too bad. So now these people got these huge anti, you know, these missile things on their roof. You know?
God.
So, I don't really know. I mean, you know, I guess I'll be watching to see, but...
Well, do you think there will actually be coverage of Mrs. Romney's horse, Sandra?
Well, you know, listen, I don't know, but I have my various whatevers on the computer where I can get nice downloads from England, so I'll be finding out, and if I get one... You'll get one. Let's just say that.
Please, absolutely, let me know.
Because I don't know what's going to be going on with that. It's another thing, like you said, they're so unaware. Because I would have kept that on a DL.
Yeah, we've told you people all you need to know about our horse.
Well, they need to not even say anything about it. It's so embarrassing. And listen, I'll hang up now, but I have to bring up, let's get real shallow, what's going on with Katherine Jackson? What'd they do to her? Where is Michael Jackson's mother?
That's so weird.
And
I was
Jackson,
I tried to read a little bit about it. It's like, Jesus, this is, what? You know, this is like
Jackson,
Scientology stuff.
No, it's weird. Janet Jackson is snatching phones and looking crazy. And, the poor children are tweeting, help, help, help. I mean, you know? Anyway, I shouldn't make fun, but it's just craziness.
No, it is crazy, and it's like I don't know, things are going sideways all over. I saw a story earlier today reporting that, I mean, you remember Cal Ripken, you know, Orioles, Iron Man, you know, set the record. His mom went missing, and like the Baltimore area went nuts. You know, where's Cal Ripken's mother?
Oh, no.
And then, you know, I saw an alert come through. Cal Ripken's mother, who was abducted yesterday, found safe and sound. And I'm thinking, I don't want to be rude or anything, but I'd like a little detail on this.
Well, and also, I mean, didn't they say that they find Katherine Jackson? She's now they're trying to say she's being held against her will in Arizona. And, you know, I tweeted that because Diana Ross is some sort of, you know, go-to person. I said she needs to reach out to the Norwegians and get help.
Norwegians.
She was married to a Norwegian industrialist, so I mean she needs to tap the resources to save Katherine. Okay, listen, I know I am completely ridiculous on this phone call,
we're just bad people, Sandra, and it's okay, and people are used to that now.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad, because I wouldn't want to have any illusions out there of anything else.
You take care and have a good night.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye now. That, of course, Sandra calling from California. Where is... No. it's a serious story. I mean, serious weirdness, if nothing else. Yeah, Ray, you know what? Where's Katherine Jackson? Ray writes in, the Mormons got her. The Scientologists, the people from Xenu, the people from Kolob. It just feels like we're... You know how I was talking about a swamp last week? Yeah, it's just thick. Too much weird. But we have made our way halfway through the program, and we're going to take a little break and come back with more of your calls. You know the number, of course, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you are on hold, please stay that way. We'll come back to you. You are listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are, in fact, listening to the horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Jess Levin. The manufactured controversy over President Obama's "you didn't build that" comments continues. Except now reporters, including those at the Associated Press and the Washington Post, are noting that he is being taken out of context. Today, Fox tried to fight back by airing what they called the context of the president's remarks.
Are his comments being manipulated for political gain? Well, let's listen to more of them together.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. You didn't get there on your own. But I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hard-working people out there. If you've got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
But again, they cut out the portion that makes clear that he is celebrating the American infrastructure that helps private enterprise thrive. For this story and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
And we're back. We're back. It's 21 minutes before the hour. 20. Now, okay. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Live from the AIC headquarters, Appalachian Community Health Emergencies Campaign headquarters in D.C. on Capitol Hill. And let's not shilly-shally about. I'm told that David from Maine is on line one. Go ahead, David.
Here we go on a prayer meetings Wednesday.
Yes, indeedy.
I have to confess, it was me who passed that on to Sam Cedar.
Was that you?
Yep.
Awesome.
And it's as simple as that, people. That's all you need to do.
Just
one,
make them aware.
Two, three. Yep, just make people aware. Hit up pundits and journalists. Don't even give a second thought about it. Just do it.
Exactly. And I got to thinking we're here and we try to get a lot of stuff done while we're here, and I'm thinking about more stuff that needs to be done. And the more outreach that that you can do, y'all can do, the better our work becomes.
You know, we often spend a lot of time banging our heads saying, what can we do, what can we do? And it really is this simple, ladies and gentlemen. It's repetition, 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 repetition. That's all it is.
Yeah, I would love a chance to go on the air with Sam and just explain the particulars of all this so people can understand the urgency with which we're trying to address this. I mean, this is...
I'm sure you will, Bob, and I'll say this. You can build you start here and you build a groundswell, and then sooner or later you're talking with Elliot Spitzer. That's how it works.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much for reaching out to Sam on that. I really appreciate it, and I'm glad that Ron and Raleigh heard it.
That's good. The Katherine Jackson thing I'll have to say is, I just apply Occam's razor. Joseph Jackson has something to do with it.
See, that was what I thought. How did?
And I shouldn't think like that, but I've listened to the interviews. I've seen how he reacts to questions, and I'm like, this family was under a serious gothic vibe that I don't even want to know about. Just, release those remasters, focus on the music, and leave Catherine and the whole family alone. Holy cow, you know?
It's just bizarre. The stuff out there that, you know, that the babies are getting hold of phones and tweeting, help, help, help. Weird.
I've got a weird story for you.
I mean, this is weird, like Shakespearean Locke the Children in the Tower of London weird, David.
I've got something as strange as that. It's regarding Sherman Hemsley, RIP to one of the great comedic actors.
Yes.
We should mention him on the program and just tell a little bit about his background. Of course, he was known for the Jeffersons, but one of the things that he wasn't known for, and I'm not making this up, Bob, this is not an Onion article, I'm not making this up, but he was a huge progressive rock fan. Like,
no,
to the level,
really?
Yes, Bob, to the level you wouldn't even imagine. To this level, Bob, to this level. He actually planned to do an album with John Anderson, a funk rock opera called Festival of Dreams.
Whoa.
Oh, and the great thing about it was because of
John Anderson, Yours Is No Disgrace, I've Seen All Good People, Yes.
Right, that's John Anderson. The John Anderson that we love and know. But the crazy thing about it is there's an article that somebody dug up, Bob, from 1978, and this shows you how intense Sherman Hemsley was, and I'm not making a word of this up. Sherman Hemsley was of the progressive rock. He called up David Allen. Heard about this? David Allen, the one of the members of Gong. Famous space rock UK outfit. And Sherman Hemsley said to him, he said, man, I really like you guys. He contacted him because he was crazy about Gong. He said, I need you to come over here, and we need to meet. And he set up a meeting, and they flew the band out to L.A. And David Allen had no idea of Sherman Hemsley's background. He knew he was an actor, but he's like, and again, this is 1978. So he gets off the plane, and he sees Sherman Hemsley signing off autographs. So he goes to his house, and David Allen said he was a bit weird because he kept talking about, I want you to see my flying teapots. My flying teapots. I want you to see my flying teapots.
Wow.
David Allen was like, I got to see what he's talking about, the flying teapots. So he takes him to the house, and he has these, I guess we could say, derelict people around who are really tripping out on drugs. And David Allen said Sherman Hemsley actually had two Mexicans in the basement in a homemade LSD factory.
No.
No, I'm serious. And here's the crazy thing about flying teapot. So he's getting all excited about doing the flying teapot thing, and he keeps talking to him about flying teapots. So he opens the room again. This is David Allen word. This is David Allen's thoughts. So maybe he's embellishing this, but I doubt it. He doesn't seem like that type. And he says, "Okay, I guess we're going to see the flying teapots now." And they open the door, and there are these naked Southern women rolling on the floor, and there's a loop playing of flying teapot, flying teapot, flying teapot, flying teapot. And the crazy thing about it was, David Allen said he kept getting calls from the publicist, because Sherman Hemsley was so obsessed with progressive rock and the whole vision of what that could be. He wanted to put these flying teapot billboards all over Hollywood. And David Allen finally said, you know, I don't think I can get on board with this. But that was his experience with Sherman Hemsley.
That's amazing.
I know, it is amazing, and it's, I really do. If anyone is in the recording industry and you have the master to Festival of Dreams with John Anderson, leak it!
Just whispering something into the universe's ear.
Right, right. So just a little bit of fun before we talk about serious natures.
Yep. Head off into the swamp.
Yeah, head off into the swamp. You were talking a little bit earlier with Sandra about I found this interesting on the Chris Hayes show. They had they were talking about the farming situation. And she said something really interesting. She said, you know, the news really isn't paying attention to the farm drought that happened last year that was worse on our farm than it was the year before. And she started talking about how it's not just the drought. It's all seasons. It's if it's too wet for farming land, it throws off your whole season plan for gardening and farming. And I thought that was interesting because we focus so much on the drought, but she said there needs to be just as much focus on having an extra wet season and what that does to the agriculture industry or the local farmers and how they cope with that.
You know, it's another one of those things, I think, David, rather like what I was saying, you know, with climate change and climatic disasters. We really, really have a deep-seated urge to just close our eyes or turn on Who Wants to Be, you know, Wants to Be a Millionaire, whatever, and pretend it's not happening. Right?
It does seem like that. I mean, my brother, as I've said before, he's working in the Virgin Islands. And to be working in the Virgin Islands, there's a volatile weather patterns that are happening, skyrocketing energy costs. And, you know, he's experiencing what I call it climate schizophrenia, what climate schizophrenia is all about. And I'll put it to you this bluntly. He doesn't know what's coming his way. He has no idea what kind of season he's having his way. And that's the type of world that we're marching towards. And
well, I don't think there's any doubt. But did you read Bill McKibben's article at Rolling Stone?
Yeah, I read parts of it. The one that he did about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, the part that grabbed me was exactly what we're talking about here. The question, and it is the question that dogs us. Those of us who actually care about the future of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, how do you engage people in it? You know, one of the things he pointed out, there was a passage in there, I think I actually read from it when we were talking about it on air, where he says, you know, we got people to put those curlicue pigtail light bulbs in all of their sockets, but beyond that, we haven't done a hell of a lot.
Yeah, I think that's the big problem is getting everybody, not just getting everybody on board, but having that sort of momentum and staying with that.
And some of that is, and I don't want to use the word fault, David.
Yeah.
But some of that is a failure of messaging on our side. And some of it is the deliberate work of the other side in trying to obfuscate the message, whatever message we do get out. I mean, how do you engage? I came to the conclusion a long time ago that engaging a majority of people over nebulous ideas of the environment as opposed to what these things do to human beings,
mm-hmm.
is a losing proposition. You know, people became interested in fracking when they were able to look up and realize that they weren't going to have any water to drink. And you know, that we've made leaps, and you know, we've got this bill in Congress now, not because suddenly people realized that mountaintop removal was bad. People have known it was bad for a long, long time. But we've got this bill in Congress now because there is science that points to the notion that it's doing really horrible things to human beings' ability to go on being human beings.
Right.
Do you see the distinction I'm trying to make? And so, you know, that has to be the focus of it. But we're also, as Bill McKibben notes, up against some fundamental, some very, very basic lessons about the way human beings respond. Unless you've got them engaged every day, all the time, then sooner or later they're going to look for the path of least resistance. And the toxic industries are providing that. Oh, no, no, no. Hey, your gasoline price per gallon will go down if we can just destroy Western Canada for tar sands oil. Oh, look, you know, your power bill will go down if we can just frack everything under the sand, under the sun. Oh, will it? Oh, okay. I think my show's on.
See? You know what it is, Bob? Our priorities are disorganized, and we need a cultural trapper keeper.
Yeah, we kind of do. And again, that was kind of touched on as well in that, you know, we suffer from this information overload.
You know, I've been meaning to talk to you about something about that. I was watching a story on 60 Minutes. I don't know if you caught it, but it was regarding the situation of gold in India. And they were talking about marriages. And one of the interesting things that I found in the program was how obsessed the Indian culture is, in specific, with gold, to a degree I had no idea of. Like, let's put this figure out. 70% of all gold is for marriages in India. 70%. Now, the crazy thing about it is, and this was the crazy thing watching the program, Bob, to me. was you saw these opulent Gulshan, Indian Gulshan type Ganesh weddings that went on for like 15, sometimes one wedding went on for 25 days. And then in contrast, they showed the workers who were barely getting nothing with their shirts off, slaving, right next to the people dancing. And I was like, this is goddamn Nutsville. But it went even crazier, Bob. One of the guys said, now peep this, people. This guy said, let me tell you how serious we are about gold. He said, if we suddenly said, no more gold in the marriages, we're done with it, India's done with it, the gold price would plummet, and so would half of the markets.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa. So that's the kind of level of wealth that's going on over in India. They went to this gold shop. Now, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen. They went to this gold shop. They had this, like, 22, maybe 23-year-old bride. And she was picking out stuff, and it was just like all kinds of gold that you could never imagine in your neck of the woods or my neck of the woods. It just wouldn't be there. And so the reporter picks something up and he goes, so is this chain, would this be good for a wedding? No, this chain would not be good for a wedding. No. And it was a good chain to me. I was like, holy cow. So he goes, no, we would do something like this, $20,000 right here, $20,000, $20,000, this chain, this is a good starter. A good starter, Bob.
Well, but see, and what you're describing there is the conspicuous consumption that comes when developing nations get a little bit more developed, and they feel like it's their turn to put their front feet in the trough.
Right.
That's why, you know, that's why we get such sidelong glances when people in the U.S. and the so-called first world or developed world or industrialized countries say, hey, India, China, listen, we got to get serious about the climate. And they go, oh, yeah, right. Now that it's our turn, we got to get serious. How serious were you 100 years ago when your industrial revolution?
And what the craziest thing about it, though, Bob, was they were talking to the wedding planners, these two very, very, very attractive young ladies who were very intelligent in the presentation, but they were completely oblivious to everything around them regarding the workers when that was brought up, regarding the workers' wages. Their eyes were so glazed because they were just talking about the presentation, the decoration, the money that was going to be spent, the money that they were going to make. And you look at all of the, but that's a crazy thing, Bob. You looked at all the workers, the whole line. I'm talking about God knows how many people with their shirts off working on the food trough or whatever, right next to people dancing. And I was like, holy cow, this is just insane, though.
You know, Ray just wrote in a couple of minutes ago, David. He said in an email titled Alone in the Garden of Hope, he said, sad effing truth is that we can't get our side to care.
Right.
Until a majority of the 99% wake up, nothing will get better. And I think there are substrata within Ray's message. You know, how long is it going to take? How long will it take to get all of the 99% to realize that they are the 99%? You know, it's one thing for a few folks, for a lot of folks to walk around with a banner saying we are the 99%. But until Emery and Eileen sitting there on their couch watching Fox News realize that they're being ripped off too, we're gonna continue to have a problem. What you're describing in India is the Americanization of consumption. We're going to consume as much as we can get just because we can. You know, it's like that old Bible verse that says, "Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die."
I thought that was Dave Matthews.
You know, probably was.
But I did want to say, before I get off and have other people share their conversation as well, the best Anglo-Saxon break of all of that's memorable is Wham's Careless Whisper.
Oh, Jesus. Don't give.
And with that,
Agnes is playing the music, David. Don't give her any ideas.
And with that, Bob, on a more upbeat note, let us all say the chant for Sherman Hemsley: flying teapots, flying teapots, flying teapots, and so forth.
David, thank you very much. Good to hear from you.
Bob, later.
All right, later. And then, of course, our pop culture correspondent, and no one but David from Maine could bring us the flying teapot story, could they? A reminder here at the top of the third hour, a reminder, Friday, here on the horn, Friday, the one, the only, Guy James, joining me for who knows how long a conversation. As long as Guy wants, as far as I'm concerned. Shucks, I'll let Guy talk, and I'll walk away for a little bit. I'd enjoy just listening to Guy. It would be fun. It would be fun to have him up here, because he's so convincing. I'd love to be able to have him up here working on the 8 campaign, and speaking off to the home office down at Pennsylvania Avenue and 11th. Those trips will live forever in my mind. The two of us sitting there making fools out of ourselves down at the Photo to Chow. My heavens. Yeah, I took Ferg there once, and he just had this sort of bemused, stunned, deer-in-the-headlights kind of look that, And I finally had to look at him and said, "Dear God, turn that disc over to Red Boy so they'll leave you alone and let you eat." But no, Guy James will be joining us Friday evening, and I hope you'll be here for it. I think it's going to be really special and a lot of fun. You know the number, of course, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. Jude just sent me a note a few minutes ago. She said, Tony Perkins.
Norman?
Over at the American... Family Research Council. They were a spinoff from Focus on the Family. Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin joins Family Research Council as Executive Vice President. Oh, Jeeves. Remember, this is the freak who said that we were able to accomplish our mission because our God was better than their God, and their God was the devil. Oh. Yeah, they were proud of it. They announced it. Family Research Council. This was released on July 16th. Family Research Council President Tony Perkins is pleased to announce today that Lieutenant General retired William G. Jerry Boykin has joined. You know, that just sounds, that word, that name just sounds like there's something bad going on. Boykin has joined Family Research Council as its Executive Vice President. In this role, he will oversee day-to-day operations, including policy, finance development, communications, human resources, facilities, information technology, constituent communications and services, bigotry, prejudice, hate, homophobia. No, I'm adding those, but that sort of goes without saying because Family Research Council is a hate organization. They're kind of like a sexuality clan. One of the original members of the U.S. Army's Delta Force. I'm honored to join the country's premier Christian public policy organization dedicated to strengthening the family. Oh, don't make me sick. Strengthening the family, my left hind foot. But speaking of which, now I want to go back to, I want to go back to this lunacy that Sandra mentioned, Chick-fil-A. You know, there's crazy, and then there's Brian Fisher. You gotta hear this. I mentioned it, but you really can't appreciate it until you've heard it come out of this. I mean, is he just sitting around snorting acid? I mean, I'm not talking about like putting a little drop behind your eyeball or something. I mean, just snorting stacks of it so that, you know, all, the walls are always breathing. The sky is always paisley. The fern fronds are always snakes. I mean, he never stops hallucinating. I mean, listen to this.
And they're trying to present themselves as these innocent little victims, helpless and hapless, being picked on across the fruited plain. And they're not. They are bullies. They are intolerant. They are vicious. They are mean. And they are after people of faith. There's no live and let live with the bullies at Big Gay. They don't know anything about tolerance. Tolerance.
Wait a minute. They're bullies? You get this? Everything that they've been doing to the gay community, suddenly they have transferred and transposed onto the gay community, and once again, the sick and twisted persecution complex of fundamentalist Christianity rears its filthy head. They're being picked on. They're being bullied. They're not being tolerated. No, there is no gay advocacy group out there that has ever attacked a person of faith or a person for their faith. What they've done is call people out for their everybody, yeah, bigotry.
It's just not in their vocabulary. They have no tolerance for those that support the institution of the natural family. None, zip, zero.
Oh, now it's the natural family. The natural family. So what, are they acknowledging that there are gay families now? But no, they're unnatural. These are monsters. These are sick, twisted people, these fundamentalists. The natural family.
They have no room in their so-called diversity world for people who believe in natural marriage.
Natural marriage. Now, see, you know why they're using a phrase like natural marriage? Because they can't refer to biblical marriage. Because if they try to refer to biblical marriage, then every one of us who are engaged in some sort of marriage arrangement are most definitely unbiblical, because if you're a guy and you didn't receive some sheep and camels and goats and perhaps some bullocks in exchange for your bride, you're not engaged in a real live, no kidding wedding. You're not in a real marriage. Your wife doesn't have a dowry. Or for that matter, biblical marriage also involves being married to a few hundred women at one time. So they can't call it biblical marriage. Now they're going for natural marriage. See, they have very well-paid staffs of sick, psychopathic, freaked-out, twisted, weird, homophobic bigots who sit around conference tables all day long trying to think, what are we going to call it next? Oh, now we'll call it natural marriage.
Claim to be all about diversity, but there is no room in their world for anybody who believes in traditional moral values. They're absolutely intolerant, and they have no room. They're anti-diversity.
Answering one of Agnes's questions, very true. She said, Agnes just mentioned to me, you mean the families that leave babies in the heat to die? Why, yes, dear. As a matter of fact, I mean precisely those kinds of families. If you're not aware of it, I'm trying to call it up here. I got this from Isaac via Twitter not too awfully long back. The woman who abandoned her child. I mean, every now and then I see these things come across. And it's everything I can do not to just literally run screaming into the night. It's mind-boggling. Chicago area mother explains why she abandoned disabled daughter. The line will make you... And now she's one of these natural mothers, okay? Because, you know, we can't have the parenting all wrapped up in being the gay. Chicago area mother says desperation led her to abandon disabled daughter in Tennessee. Algonquin woman said she couldn't cope with 19-year-old's disabilities or mounting cost of caring for her, but not everyone is sympathetic to her plight. This from the Chicago Tribune. Eva Cameron knows people don't understand. The Algonquin mother of three says she could no longer cope with her 19-year-old daughter's disabilities, escalating behavioral problems, or medical bills. So after a conflict with a social worker, Cameron packed her eldest into her car last month and drove to rural Caryville, Tennessee. There, she watched as her daughter entered the big orange bar to use the restroom, and then Cameron turned around and drove home saying, wait for it. Strap in. You might want to just, I don't know, bite down on a piece of the loaf of day-old bread just to sort of muffle the screams. I handed the wheel to Jesus. I handed the wheel to Jesus. Cameron said she doesn't want to bring her daughter back to Illinois. She doesn't believe the state will provide adequate medical services or housing for the young woman who functions at the intellectual level of a 3-year-old. We want her in the South, Cameron said. She can't do snow. Honey, it snows in Tennessee, too. Just not a lot. How sickeningly we treat our own citizens. I handed the wheel to Jesus. Advocates, and this is telling. You know, this is another one of those little road signs. Advocates for the disabled say they increasingly hear from people who are overwhelmed as caregivers and desperate for help in navigating a confusing array of social services. In Illinois and elsewhere, already scarce services are shrinking because of, oh look, budget cuts. Why are we having budget cuts? Because right-wingers scream the government is going broke, and they talk about drowning things in bathtubs. Both Tennessee and Illinois have a lengthy waiting list for housing for people with disabilities, the advocates said. What kind of a country that calls itself either great or Christian has a long waiting list for services for people with disabilities? The answer, neither. Or not much. Meanwhile, a 19-year-old female with the operational skills of a 3-year-old just knows, maybe, that her mama is gone and doesn't know where mama is. But by all means, Brian Fisher, let's talk about those natural families.
And so I'm talking about this with regard specifically to Chick-fil-A, and I am pointing out that the bullies at Big Gay are coming after Chick-fil-A. They're trying to take them out.
Oh, that even rhymes. Big Gay is coming after Chick-fil-A.
They're trying to obliterate them. They're trying to go Ahmadinejad on Chick-fil-A. They want them wiped off the face of the map.
Can anybody, I mean, and, you know, this is maybe one of those rare moments when I would actually allow a right-winger to have a say on this program. Can anybody point me to a press release or a statement by anybody who has said they want Chick-fil-A to be wiped off the map or eliminated? No, everything I've seen just says, look, if Chick-fil-A doesn't want my business, I don't need to give Chick-fil-A my business. But we ain't got to the fun part yet. Listen to how vile and vulgar this man is. Listen to the imagery he has to eventually use in order just to sort of satiate his need for sickness.
Look at our goal to buy out every chicken sandwich that Chick-fil-A makes on August 1. Let's have them run out of chickens. Let's send them out in behind the restaurant with an axe to cut the heads off of more chickens to feed people because they're selling so many chicken sandwiches.
Yeah. You got that? Let's have them. Did you hear the joy, the glee with which he offered that up? Let's have them run out of chickens. Let's have them send them out behind the restaurant. Because, you know, that's where the chickens are. They're out behind the restaurant. There's a big chicken coop out there. You see it anywhere. You see a Chick-fil-A. Great, great big giant chicken coop outside. And somebody out there with an axe. Did you hear? An axe. Brian, I always figured you were one of those for wranging their necks. Ain't she? Yeah, listen to the Christian. They want to go all Ahmadinejad. See, isn't that beautiful? Isn't that brilliant? They work in some Muslim hate and some homophobia, and the next thing you know, Emery and Eileen are sitting there, yeah, I reckon we got to go eat at the Chick-fil-A, because otherwise the homosexuals will treat them like Iran wants to treat our beloved Israel. God Almighty. But, you know, this is the crazy that comes spewing out of the multi-million-dollar religion industry hate group, the American Family Association. Oh, you only thought Brian Fisher was nuts. No, there's more. And, you know, it's another Ginsu commercial, but wait, there's more. If you order now, you'll not only get Big Gay is treating Chick-fil-A like Ahmadinejad, you'll get this.
You know, we talk frequently on this program about how people who have an active, vibrant spiritual life are healthier. How they live longer.
Yeah, they talk about it, but there's no damn proof of it. They're just saying. You know, see, that's the difference between proof and talking about.
They are healthier and they are happier. So their physical health is better. What we ought to do is we ought to have an individual mandate from the government that everybody has to go to church. Because after all, Obamacare is all about improving the health of the American people. We know that going to church is good for you. It's good for your health. So we are going to mandate that you go to church for your own health, and we are going to tax the atheists who don't go to church. Now, we can't make you go to church, but we are going to penalize you if you don't. We're going to assess a tax on every atheist that doesn't go to church, because those atheists are endangering their physical health. That is actually a brilliant, brilliant suggestion.
In what universe? You got that? I mean, these Christian dominionists, these Christian constructionists, yet they really, really do want to jam. You know, Ray notes how utterly repulsive for them claiming to be persecuted. Their damage is far too deep a stain for history to weep forever. Well, it's not forever, Ray. We've only been weeping for 2,000 years from their sickness. Marty asking, Big Gay? I seem to remember a story about certain people, groups, companies about their financial opposition to Proposition 8 here in California. They were attempting to bully them into making an equal or greater contribution to them to support Proposition 8. The religion industrial complex in full flower. Absolutely. Kate, on the front range. She She says, no tolerance, no room in my world, no vacancy. The Chick-fil-A thing has created no small amount of discussion out there in social media land. John Fox has made me aware of one that's particularly good. By the way, you know that the Muppets said that they will not be making toys for Chick-fil-A's kids' meals anymore. Some asshat on Facebook said, admit it, Chick-fil-A, you stopped carrying Jim Henson's puppets as kids' meal toys because you got dumped for being bigots. Well, this guy's not an asshat. Not because some kids got their fingers stuck. Yeah, the Chick-fil-A tried to pretend to be some kid on Facebook saying, oh, they've had to pull the toys because children are getting their fingers stuck. Ridiculous. And then finally, FYI, busted, you effing moron. Pretty redhead teenager isolated on white smiling stock photo. How interesting, though, that these are Christians, remember? They're not supposed to be telling big stinking lies. But it happens. It happens. John sent this along, a screen cap from Facebook. Some dude named Kyle. If we should give homosexuals equal rights, should we give them to pedophiles as well? After all, freedom of choice, right? Both are sexually immorality. God speaks against homosexuality. Stop picking up man's laws and man's ideas. The reason we're in this state is because we've gone away from God's commandments. Dude put that on Facebook. Dude then got this handed to him in response from Courtney. So, is masturbating in a parking lot on somebody else's truck in front of all your friends, but yet it's something you did? Don't think you're being a bit hypocritical? To which Kyle, who's worried about God's commandments, responds, really, Courtney, you got to bring that up? That was a while ago, and yes, it was obviously wrong. I don't get drunk anymore, though. Repentance is definitely needed. Which is reminiscent of that old line about God may forgive you. But I won't. Such Ron and Raleigh. Big Gay? I think they're referring to Big Gay Bob from South Park. That's super. Thanks for asking. Big Gay. They probably do secretly watch South Park over there at the American Family Association. Isaac noting with the I handed the wheel to Jesus lady. Those people in the bar said she opened the door and shoved the 19-year-old girl in. By the way, Agnes mentioning, hey, Cossack. Agnes telling me you just got out of the hospital and couldn't stay on the line for very long. Not quite got your strength back. I hope you get it back soon, Cossack. We're thinking of you, brother. Tim from L.A. is not buying into the healthier Christians thing either. Christians are healthy? Really? I got a feeling Tim is recovering something or another, too. If you read the Bible, did you know that there were diseases? Ague, abscess, atrophy, blindness, boils and blains, consumption, demonical possession, deafness, debility, dropsy, dumbness, dysentery, hemorrhoids? Fever, impediment speech, itch, inflammation, issue of blood, lameness, leprosy, loss of appetite, lunacy, melancholy, palsy, plague, scab, sunstroke, ulcers, and worms. Yet it was science that cured most of these diseases, and a long-haired anti-church hippie named Jesus healed many of the sick without a copay. So Christians are healthier than us? You get it, Tim. You get it. Yeah, Brian Fisher. Yes, Ray, you're right. Let me guess, this asshole decides which church I go to. Yes, absolutely. Theirs. The right one. The right one is, by definition, whichever one they've chosen. No, they picked out August the 1st as the day that they will prove Christ's love for Chick-fil-A. Oh, the sickos are out there in all kinds of manifestations. This is, after all, Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Matt Barber, in this case, is another one of those babbling, well-funded babbling baboon. Well, I don't call him a baboon. I have too much respect for a baboon. One of those babbling baboon. No, I just did it. Daggummit. Matt Barber is one of those babbling idiots. Who's very well paid, who just opens the microphone and starts hallucinating and hallucinating wildly. Where Brian Fisher is angry at Big Gay, Matt Barber is angry at Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Because Secretary of State Clinton suggested it might not be a bad idea for LGBTQQ people not to be tormented to death just for being who they are in foreign countries. Like I said, it didn't sit well with Matt Barber of Liberty Council.
Shame on Hillary Clinton in choosing to ignore the reality that in the United States, people are primarily infected with AIDS through deviant homosexual behavior. She has essentially postured with a false air of resolve while...
Now, wait a minute. I need to understand what... And I don't know, maybe one of y'all who...
The deviant homosexual behavior, she has essentially...
Yeah, see, that's the word I'm on about. Maybe one of y'all out there can explain to me what deviant homosexual behavior is. I mean, what the hell does that mean? Is this one of those moments when Matt Barber's Freudian slip is showing? It's either deviant behavior or... do you understand what I'm getting at? It makes it sound like there's a wrong way to be gay. And a right way to be gay. You know, maybe the right way is to go stealthily and incognito trolling gay bars and visiting men's bathrooms in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and tapping one's toes and having a wide stance, but not living openly or honestly within one's own existence. Maybe that's the right way to be gay. You know, in the closet, that's the right way to be gay.
With AIDS through deviant homosexual behavior, she has essentially postured with a false air of resolve while cowardly refusing to address the real cause of AIDS in the U.S., and that's homosexual behavior. We all know better, and so did Hillary Clinton. Opportunity here to show courage and discourage people from engaging in the high-risk behavior, homosexuality, that spreads AIDS.
Jesus. This guy doesn't even have the first freaking clue about what's going on other parts of the planet. About babies. Really? Does deviant homosexual behavior spread HIV to babies in the womb, Matt Barber, you monster? it's almost too much to, it's too much to bear. Meanwhile, there was a press conference today here in Washington, D.C., the first one given by the man who is referred to as the Berlin patient. Are you familiar with the Berlin patient? If you follow HIV stories, you probably are. The Berlin patient had a news conference here in Washington, D.C. today. He is apparently the only person ever to be outright cured of HIV. He had a stem cell transplant, I believe, for a different condition, if I understand correctly. And then when they did the blood work afterward, lo and behold, his HIV was gone too. But, no, we can't talk about that good news because Matt Barber of Liberty Council has to fulminate about Tegay. Ron and Raleigh, may I suggest babbling buffoons or babbling poltroons? Poltroon sounds good. I think we could work with that. Ray noting, poor Hillary. Surrounded by deviant sexual behavior. Well, if you want real deviant sexual behavior, no, we don't want to put a camera in Matt Barber's bedroom. Yes. And don't even kid about it. So there's your right wing religion industry on parade. Nothing but hate, nonstop. Full throttle, no let up. Ugh. I do have to, Sandra, I mentioned this in talking with Sandra earlier when she was talking about Thomas Friedman. This is the piece in full that Flavio sent to me. And it will hurt you. Dr. John, the prepare to be, yeah. The name of the piece, again, it comes from the America, it comes from prospect.org. And it's called The Dotson and the Shoe Tree by Thomas Free Trademan. I was changing planes at the new airport in Jakarta the other day on the way to Stockholm from Vladivostok. Three young Bangladeshi boys sat in the passenger lounge watching the Power Rangers on satellite TV. Their mother, garbed in the traditional sari, talked to her cousin, a migrant worker who sold German-designed Walkman knockoffs in Hong Kong on a shiny new Samsung cell phone. Sitting to one side of them was a young Chinese emigre on his way to Toronto to work for a software company, and on the other, a business-suited Rastafarian making a connection to Bratislava. God, that's good. Meanwhile, a couple of Tuareg tribesmen sat cross-legged in front of the ticket counter cooking yams over a flaming mound of ticket stubs. What's my point? I don't actually have one. But opening my columns with strings of cliched cultural juxtapositions really cuts down my workload. You see, since the Cold War ended, we've gone from superpowers to spreadsheets, Pershings to Pentiums, the Berlin Wall to suburban sprawl, olive trees to Lexuses. Are you ready? Because the whole world is changing. Unless you're one of the 8/10 of humanity who at this moment are either hungry, illiterate, or field-stripping an AK-47, in which case, I'll get back to you in some future column. Nothing is local anymore. It's all global because the Internet makes everything local, which is the same as everything being global, because nothing has to be local when everything's global, especially the local. For instance, I was talking to the guy who cleaned the toilets in my suite at the Bombay Hilton, and he told me, if only I had a computer. You see, toilet scrubbing in Bombay is really a local business, but with my laptop and a modem, I could maybe branch out into e-commerce services. He gets it. He knows how the world works. Other people who understand how the world works are my good friends Ehud Barak, Haydar Aliyev. You know Haydar, the president of Azerbaijan, Vladimir Putin, Kofi Annan, my book club, Strobe, Jim Baker, and the rest. I'd quote one of these guys here, but everyone's over at the Trilateral Commission's annual in London. Did I mention I'm a member? But there are still many people who just don't seem to get it. And not just those stupid hippies in Seattle and D.C. For instance, I was recently on an author tour in Botswana promoting the Bantu language version of my new book, having just returned from Uzbekistan via Khartoum. They built a huge stage for me in the stadium at Gaborone, set up with lots of audio equipment and what looked to be a drum kit. There was a crowd of thousands, and they all kept shouting, thrill her, and Mike Al, which I believe is Bantu for We Love Free Trademen. As my friend Nelson Mandela always likes to say, those crazy Botswana. Anyway, I picked up a microphone and explained why global free trade would eventually make everyone better off, even if some people would suffer in the short term. But they just looked confused. Eventually, some husky men in security t-shirts escorted me back to my limo. Such are the forces aligned against progress. But that was months ago, and in this ultra-fast, hyperlinked, worldwide webbed world of ours, that may as well be decades. When the speed of computer processors doubles every 18 months, old ideas and ideologies can become obsolete in weeks, even days. For instance, I once made up something called the Golden Arches Theory of Conflict Prevention, which held that no two countries that have a McDonald's franchise have ever gone to war. Then the USAF bombed Belgrade. Oops. But that just proved my point. Like an inefficient Korean chaebol, I was forced to come up with a new theory. It's called the post-1989 Western Democracy Theory of Conflict Prevention, which holds that no two industrialized democracies in Western Europe and North America have ever gone to war since the fall of the Berlin Wall. And if that one fails, there's always my post-Habsburg-Liechtenstein-Morocco Theory of Conflict Prevention, which holds that no two remnant European city-states have ever gone to war since the fall of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Anyway, the world out there is changing fast. We have to change with it. Whether we're ready or not. But imagine the world as it could be if we finally tore down those walls. We could have a computer in every home, an internet connection in every classroom, a Big Mac in every stomach, tortured metaphors in every paragraph, and a brilliant free-trading celebrity foreign affairs columnist in every newspaper. Would you go mad if you had to live inside Thomas Friedman's skull for a day and a half? Just making up all of those non-existent people that you're having conversations with? Honestly, midwife in Syria? Jude writing in. The young girl left, Tony Perkins, Brian Fisher. In their own holy book, Bob, Zephaniah, chapter 3, in the last line of verse 5, yet the unrighteous know no shame. Fits them to a T, don't you think? May some kind soul have found the young girl left alone, Bob, and provided the insight and gentleness she so required, bringing her to a loving place where she's being cared for by a professional kindred spirit. So much pain for far too many innocents. American exceptionalism, as my mother would have said, hogwash. Yeah, there's your American exceptionalism. Ray noting, big and buttery. You know, if you're a fundamentalist Christian, or shooting up a movie theater, you're after the same result. Well, yeah, and that's why the religion industry jumped right out there in the days following the Aurora massacre and said, "Well, at least the people who were killed who were Christians got to go to heaven. The rest of them are burning in hell." Can you imagine what kind of sick and twisted mentality it takes to say that in those circumstances? How utterly devoid of anything resembling human compassion you have to be to say that the non-Christians are burning in hell, having just been massacred for going to a movie. It's too damn much to comprehend or even tolerate. It's amazing to think that right-wing religion industry not only thinks like that, but are willing to say so publicly. Holy cow. I mean, are you as amazed by a follower of the Prince of Peace would have the nerve to offer up an opinion on the whereabouts of a murdered human being from a mass murder? Yeah, Agnes, you're right. It's the do unto others as you would have done unto you ideology, except for the part that they don't want it done unto them. Whew. Too much to tolerate. Meanwhile, the only thing that the Romneyites, the Romulans, can talk about is the speech that Barack Obama made in Roanoke, Virginia, where he said, "You didn't build that." It's all they got. I just got one of their stupid campaign pitch emails. The context is even worse than the quote itself. Bob, if every American saw this video, Barack Obama would be out of a job in November. Well, Matt Rhodes, how about those of us who aren't Anglo-Saxons? How are we supposed to respond to your boss? Oh, he's disavowed those statements, Bob. Does your house have an elevator for the horse too? I mean, I don't think that's an unfair question. Not at all. Oh, by the way, you know that attack ad that the Romulans put out about the "you didn't build that" business? This guy named Jack Gilchrist in the ad this is what it sounds like. It's pretty sick.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. If you've got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
My father's hands didn't build this company.
Now what? What's...
My hands didn't build this company. Through hard work and a little bit of luck, we built this business. Why are you demonizing us for it? It's time we had somebody who believes in us. Someone who believes that achievement...
Yeah, okay. Except for the fact that... And what's the word I'm looking for here? Yeah, it's all bullshit. The guy talking in that ad is a character by the name of Jack Gilchrist. Jack Gilchrist runs Gilchrist Metal Fabricating in Hudson, New Hampshire. My father's hands didn't build this company. My hands didn't build this company. My son's hands aren't building this company. Through hard work and a little bit of luck, we built this business. Why are you demonizing us for it? Well, one, that word... demonizing? At what point in time did Barack Obama demonize anybody? You know, there's a lot of people in this country that probably need a good demonizing, and I'm damned if I've ever heard of Barack Obama demonize. No. Well, it turns out that Jack Gilchrist is a filthy little hypocrite. Because Jack Gilchrist would probably be working for somebody else instead of being the successful businessman that he is. If he hadn't had some help building, you're saying we didn't build this? Yes, yes, Jack Gilchrist, I am saying you didn't build that with your hands. You built it with mine. And with every other American's. Because see, this is how it works. Jack Gilchrist has been caught with his front feet in the trough and trying to get the back trotters in too. His fabulously successful company that he built with his hands actually happened because he has supped at the public trough. In 1999, Gilchrist Metal received $800,000, this according to the New Hampshire Union Leader, received $800,000 in tax-exempt revenue bonds issued by the New Hampshire Business Finance Authority to set up a second manufacturing plant and purchase equipment to produce high-definition television broadcasting equipment. Last year, Gilchrist Metal also received two U.S. Navy subcontracts, totaling about $83,000 and a smaller $5,600 Coast Guard contract in 2008. That also according to a government website that tracks spending. He got a Small Business Administration loan of no more than $500,000. Jack Gilchrist explained, "I'm not going to turn a blind eye because the money came from the government. As far as I'm concerned, I'm getting some of my tax money back. I'm not stupid. I'm not going to say no. Shame on me if I didn't use what's available." So, in other words, he's a hypocrite. Surprise! No. You either? No, me neither. No surprise. They're disgusting. Absolutely disgusting.
I'm a self-made man who made himself through
Who's counting among friends? And can't even say thank you.
I'm getting some of my tax money back.
Really, Buster? You've paid $2 million in taxes? You have? Well, that means you probably got somewhere around $9 million, or maybe 10. And you're just getting some of it back? No, you're getting some of mine. You're getting some of all of ours. And you don't, you know, Mama was always big about teaching some basic manners. And when the government gives you our tax dollars, the appropriate response, Jack Gilchrist, you horse's rear end, is thank you. Thank you, American people, for propping me up. Thank you, American people, for my Small Business Administration loan. Thank you, American people, for the contract that I got from the U.S. Navy. Thank you, American people, for the contract I got from the Coast Guard. Thank you. Thank you. We eat real good because of the American government. And no, I didn't build it all myself. Just like that Shake and Bake Chicken commercial from a million years ago, we helped. Right? Yeah.
You telling me I didn't make this man? And lo and behold, they are still hanging on to "you didn't build this" as if they've really finally gotten their winning ways built around. And so now they're passing around the actual Roanoke speech. This is the same clip President Obama is using to try and recant his comments that denigrated small business owners. You know, piss off, Repiglickens. It seems like every word you use, you don't know what it means. There's no denigration in saying that businesses benefit from the public good. That's why it's the public good. There's no sin in admitting that the commons serve the needs of all of us. And the commons aren't just some green space. The commons are our tax structure. The commons are clean air. The commons are our roads, our railways, the channels that we dredge out of rivers. And instead of hollering about denigration, when we do something right by each other through the government that we, the people, empower, the Repiglickens want to go and cry. But me, I say when we do that, we need to pat each other on the back. Hey, good job, America. Good job. Yeah, the roads need patching, but you know what? It's a big road system, and it gets a lot of stuff to a lot of different places. California is going to have a high-speed rail line. Good job, America, helping California build that rail line. Why, looky there, Wisconsin and Ohio could have one too, but they're idiots. They have idiots in their governor's mansions.
Because America's going broke and can't afford appropriate transportation.
You know, isn't that the heart and soul of it?
I can't have high-speed rail in Florida. We're too busy purging voters.
Good job, California, for having that kind of good common sense. Good job. And this will be a much better country when we are saying to each other more frequently, good job, good job. Right? Again, I'm one of those Pollyanna-ish little optimists who, if I find something I really like, I will praise it highly. If I deal with customer support, or tech support on something, and they do a good job, at the end of the call, I say, listen, let me talk to your manager. I want to tell him how good you did today. I want to tell him what a value you are to your company. Thank you very much. Because we have been trained in this country to do nothing but gripe. When what most people need, who are working for substandard wages in the first place, is for somebody just to act like they matter. And you know what? As silly as it may sound, you may not just make their day. As George Carlin used to say, you may make their life. They may be sitting there 80 years old, gnawing on the turkey on Thanksgiving Day. And did I ever tell you about the crazy guy who really told... No, it won't be the crazy guy. Did I ever tell you about the guy who made me feel so good, and he told my boss I was a good... And, you know, I got a promotion a little bit after that. And then, you know, the next thing you know, I was running a metal shop and bitching about the government. No, stop it, Bob. I've got some fracking data for you, but I am not going to use it at this juncture of the program. Perhaps we'll talk about it tomorrow evening or on Friday. It's important.
there's still a possibility we may not be on the air tomorrow night because, we'll depending on when the House votes and stuff, we may go over to do a little walk and talk advocacy. Thanks, everybody, for making all of this possible in every means by which you do it. Your kind contributions, your ideas, the time, the finite time that you spend with us that is the most precious thing you have to offer. That's humbling in the extreme. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to Dancing Texas Betsy, our blogger. Thanks to John Fox in Australia, who has been of immense help in this process, especially on this remote. Thanks, John. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. 10 years now, perhaps more than 10 years now, that almost single-handedly Ben Birch saved progressive radio on the internet and let it be nurtured until it could flourish to the extent that it does. That's what Ben Birch did at WhiteRoseSociety.org, and every stream goes out over the White Rose Society of this program. So thanks, Ben. Thanks, of course, always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and most importantly right now, acheact.org, acheact.org, acheact.org. Go there, learn how you can be a part of the solution to Appalachia's agony. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.